Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. Ukraine's president says most of his government's forces have pulled out of the contested eastern Ukrainian town of Debaltseve, which has been under siege by pro-Russian rebels and where fighting has continued despite a ceasefire. Kiev's forces carried out a planned and organized withdrawal from Debaltseve, according to a video statement by President Petro Poroshenko. Mr. Poroshenko said, so far, 80% of Ukrainian units have left the city, adding that another two columns are expected to withdraw soon. The separatists insisted they surrounded the town before the ceasefire began, making it an internal part of the rebel-held region rather than part of the front lines where envoys agreed the fighting would stop. Mr. Poroshenko denied those claims Wednesday. U.S. President Barack Obama will deliver the keynote address Wednesday at a summit in Washington on combating and preventing violent extremism. The summit comes as the United States and its allies are struggling with the rapid bloody rise of the extremist group Islamic State in Iraq and Syria and recent terrorist attacks in Australia, Canada, France, and Denmark. In an opinion piece published Wednesday in the Los Angeles Times, Mr. Obama said groups like ISIL and Al-Qaeda exploit the anger that festers when people feel that injustice and corruption leave them no chance of improving their lives. But the administration has been careful not to put the focus of this week's summit solely on Islamic extremism, but on all forms of extremism, a strategy that has drawn criticism from conservative Republicans. This is VOA News. The United Nations Security Council is scheduled to hold an emergency session Wednesday on the crisis in Libya, a country that has struggled for political stability, while militia groups and an internationally backed government battle for power and territory. The government in neighboring Egypt directed its attention on the situation this week after Islamic State militants beheaded 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians in Libya. Egypt's foreign minister, Sameh Hassan Shoukry Salim, told reporters Tuesday in New York that Arab diplomats are working on a resolution that would include measures to halt the flow of weapons to the militias.
The legitimate government is in dire need of support, whether politically or militarily, in the provision of equipment that have been restricted by the Security Council so that it can undertake its responsibility to defend the Libyan people and the third nationals on Libyan territory.
He also said a political settlement in Libya, where parallel governments are operating in Tripoli and Tobruk, will not eradicate militant ideology. The number of Afghan civilians killed by conflict-related violence rose by 25% last year to the highest level since at least 2009, according to a new United Nations report released Wednesday. The UN assistance mission in Afghanistan said the fighting killed 3,699 civilians and injured 6,849 others, including a record number of deaths among both women and children. The report attributed the jump to an increase in ground fighting along with the use of mortars, rockets, and grenades in populated areas. It noted rises in both suicide attacks and those involving improvised explosive devices. Another factor was the withdrawal of international combat troops who turned over full responsibility for Afghanistan's security to the country's security forces in 2014. Myanmar has declared a state of emergency and imposed a three-month period of martial law in a northern region that has been seen deadly clashes between government troops and ethnic minority rebels. The moves announced in a late Tuesday television address by President Thein Sein come as civilians in the Kogang region continue to flee the fighting, which has killed at least 50 troops and 26 rebels, according to government figures. And Geneva prosecutors have raided the Swiss office of the British banking agent HSBC and announced a criminal investigation into accusations it was laundering money. The raid was taking place as the offices of HSBC Private Bank, according to a statement released Wednesday by Geneva's prosecutors. Prosecutors said they were investigating criminal charges of aggravated money laundering. I'm Bob Doty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
A conference bringing together spiritual leaders, police, and representatives from more than 60 countries is underway in Washington, where President Obama hopes to come up with ways to counter violent extremism.
That's VOA's White House correspondent Luis Ramirez reporting. Details coming up.
Also, the United Nations Security Council is scheduled to hold an emergency session today on the crisis in Libya, and nearly 40 people died in suicide bombings in Nigeria yesterday.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Sierra Leone, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the United Nations Security Council is scheduled to hold an emergency session today on the crisis in Libya. Militia groups and an internationally backed government are fighting for power and territory. Parallel governments are operating in Tripoli and Tobruk. Egypt directed its attention to Libya this week after Islamic State militants beheaded 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians in Libya. Foreign Minister Sameh Hassan Shoukry Selam says Arab diplomats are working on a resolution that would include halting the flow of weapons to the militias that have existed since the 2011 ouster of Muammar Gaddafi. He also says a political settlement in Libya will not eradicate militant ideology. The draft resolution is not expected to be presented today. Meanwhile, Italy is calling on the Security Council to take immediate action to end Libya's civil war. Italian Foreign Minister Paolo Gentiloni says the fighting in Libya threatens to destabilize the region even further. The Islamic State has a presence in Libya. Thousands of sub-Saharan Africans have sailed from unpatrolled Libyan shores in unsafe boats, creating a refugee and migrant crisis on the Mediterranean Sea. He says migrant arrivals have surged nearly 60% in the first 6 weeks of the year to more than 5,000.
Nearly 40 people died in suicide bombings in Biu, Nigeria, yesterday. That's near the border with Cameroon. A civilian militia leader says 20 civilians and 17 members of Boko Haram died in the blasts at a Nigerian military checkpoint. Also yesterday, hundreds of Boko Haram fighters attacked a Cameroon military base in Waza. They set fire to nearby village homes before returning to Nigeria. Cameroon newspapers report today that the United States is offering some support to Cameroon in the fight against Boko Haram. U.S. Ambassador Michael Stephen Hoza is quoted as saying, Washington has agreed to provide the Cameroon military with what he calls a logistical pipeline of material. Ambassador Hoza calls the support necessary to defend the country. U.S. Defense Department officials had indicated earlier they would provide cell phones, radios, and computers to regional forces opposing the Islamist radicals. In related news today, a Nigerian military spokesman says Nigerian forces have killed more than 300 Boko Haram fighters in efforts to retake 11 Nigerian towns in the last several days.
A conference bringing together spiritual leaders, police, and representatives from more than 60 countries is underway in Washington, where President Obama hopes to come up with ways to counter violent extremism. VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez reports.
How to combat violent extremism at its source is a big question that officials from 60 countries and from cities throughout the United States are trying to answer at the summit, which opened Tuesday at the White House. At a roundtable that included officials from Belgium and the Netherlands and local police officials from across the U.S., Vice President Joe Biden called for an approach that goes beyond airstrikes and invasions.
We're here today because we all understand that in dealing with violent extremism, we need answers that go beyond a military answer. We need answers that go beyond force.
Obama administration officials say reaching into America's toughest neighborhoods is key to discrediting the appeals that terrorists might have and to preventing young people who want to escape marginalization and isolation from turning to extremist ideologies. To that end, the White House invited police officials from Los Angeles, Boston, and Minneapolis, whose youth outreach programs are models for ones President Obama would like to set up nationwide. Vice President Biden noted Minneapolis' efforts to engage members of the city's Somali-born population. In a light remark, Mr. Biden compared the inclusion efforts to those of his home city of Wilmington in the U.S. state of Delaware, which also has a community of Somali immigrants.
If you ever come to the train station with me, you'll notice that I have great relationships with them because there's an awful lot of driving cabs and are friends of mine, for real.
To some analysts, the remark illustrated the goodwill that exists, but also the work that needs to be done in assimilating America's Muslim recent immigrants. While the question of how to prevent extremism at its roots is too large to answer in a three-day summit, analysts say the meeting is an important first step in finding a solution that goes beyond leading wars on terrorists. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the White House.
The military spokesman for South Sudan's armed opposition has defected from the group due to concerns about the movement's leadership. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports it is not yet clear what effect the move will have on the conflict or ongoing peace talks with the government.
Brigadier General Lul Ruai Koang announced a split with South Sudan's rebel opposition, which has been battling government forces since December 2013. Announcing the formation of a new group called the South Sudan Resistance Movement and Army, Koang cited differences with opposition leader, former Vice President Riek Machar.
The declaration we are making today is that we do not longer want to be fighting for an organization that wants to keep on fighting simply because one man at the top wants to rule this country by force.
Koang previously served as a spokesman for the opposition and a representative during peace talks in Addis Ababa. Speaking in Nairobi, he said he could not say exactly how many people have joined the new movement, but estimated 75% of the opposition is behind him. He said the new resistance movement, which allegedly includes military commanders, is declaring a ceasefire and is waiting for the government to respond.
We have been preparing for a major offensive. The government has been preparing for a major offensive, and we are trying to avert this eventuality by declaring a unilateral ceasefire and talk instead of fighting. So I'm once again calling upon the government to listen to voices of people calling for peace.
The conflict in South Sudan began when a political dispute between Machar and President Salva Kiir turned violent, splitting factions of the armed forces against each other and prompting inter-ethnic violence between Mr. Kiir's Dinka people and Machar's Nuer community. Koang said the resistance movement represents Nuer people and is calling for the establishment of a Nuer state. The former spokesman denied he is effectively defecting to the side of government, although the news conference Wednesday was organized by the South Sudanese embassy and attended by a number of diplomats. South Sudanese Foreign Minister Barnaba Mariel Benjamin also told VOA the government welcomes the formation of the new movement.
This is an excellent move on their part. It is the realization of their patriotism that the sovereignty of South Sudan cannot be tampered with. In the name of a single tribe, and that it is important that they become a part of the national fabric of the whole of South Sudan.
It is not clear what effect the move will have on peace talks. The parties have signed several cessation of hostilities agreements in the past year, which have all been almost immediately violated. The most recent deal, signed earlier this month, paved the way for a transitional government and called for a more comprehensive agreement to be finalized by March 5th. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
More than 80 South Sudanese women gathered at a one-day forum in Juba yesterday to demand their voices be heard in the peace process. They say thousands of women have been beaten, raped, and killed in South Sudan's 14-month-old conflict. Mugumi Davis Wakaringe has more from Juba.
Like many South Sudanese women, 25-year-old Aur Majul Nial of Jonglei State witnessed unspeakable horrors last year.
When I saw my age mate being raped, like what happened in Bor, when I saw some women who used to be in the same church were raped because they were in church and then later on killed. When I saw that picture, I could not sleep because it really touches me and I was almost getting mad.
Majul Nihal says her family home was destroyed in the fighting last January. She says she's recovering but still traumatized. More than 80 women from all 10 states attended yesterday's forum. Palek Matthew Obor, executive director of the South Sudan Women's Empowerment Network, read an open communique on behalf of the participants.
In every accountability discussion and process, women should be involved, and special consideration should be given to address sexual and gender-based violence, including rape and sexual assaults.
The forum was sponsored by the NGO Success, which stands system to uphold the credibility and constitutionality of elections in South Sudan. It is a USAID-funded program designed to improve good governance in South Sudan. Women activists are pushing for a provision that mandates at least 25% women's representation in the formation and structure of the transitional government of national unity and in all decision-making bodies at national and state levels. Betty Sande Ben, founder of the NGO Voice of the Voiceless, is demanding women's rights be written into any new peace agreement. She says if they are not, women will stop taking care of the men.
We are going to mobilize all women to the 10 states that we should not cook, we should not everything we are going to do, because they are the one who is raping us, the men, they are the one who is killing us, and then we are at the same time the one who are cooking for them, and then we are their wife. So we don't want to give birth to the graves.
Activist Harriet Pony Dumba agrees.
We've been raising our voices, but we feel that our voices has not been really taken into consideration. But this time we want to pass a message that we are very serious about this and we really demand for peace. We are not asking, but we're demanding for peace.
The South Sudanese women activists say they will send their resolution to IGAD negotiators in Addis Ababa for adoption. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The United Nations Security Council is scheduled to hold an emergency session today on the crisis in Libya. Nearly 40 people died in suicide bombings in Nigeria yesterday. And the military spokesman for South Sudan's armed opposition has defected from the group due to concerns about the movement's leadership. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
New food security initiatives are being launched in Guinea, one of the country's hardest hit by the Ebola epidemic. The World Bank is investing $5 million to fund efforts by the UN Food and Agriculture Organization and the government of Guinea. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Ebola outbreak began in Guinea over a year ago. Since then, there have been over 3,100 cases and more than 2,000 deaths in the country. Vincent Martin is head of the FAO's Sub-Regional Resilience Hub for West Africa and is based in Dakar. He says there's been good news of late about the slowing of the outbreak.
There is a feeling of relief in some of these communities, although we know that the situation is still fragile and very volatile, and everybody has to keep the vigilance very, very high so that it doesn't flare up again.
Ebola caused a drop in food production in Guinea, but Martin says the ripple effect had greater consequences.
What was more important during the crisis was not so much the impact on the production per se, but the impact on the market chains, the impact on the trade, the loss of incomes of these families, of households that live on agricultural trade and commerce. And this is what has really affected these communities.
The food security efforts in rural Guinea are part of the FAO's Ebola response program.
This Ebola program has four main pillars. The first one is about social mobilization and sensitization. The second one is about boosting agricultural production. The third one is about increasing the resilience of vulnerable communities. And the fourth one is about coordination.
He says the program trains rural communities on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
We will sensitize around 240,000 people to these prevention measures. The second component of this project in Guinea will be about boosting the agricultural production, improve seeds, fertilizers, farming equipment, so that they get ready for the next season and they are not hit again by another shock, let's say.
The Ebola Response Program also aims to increase job opportunities. About 2,000 young people will be supported by a Cash for Work project. The FAO cautions that communities will need time to recover from the shock of Ebola. However, it warns that if no action is taken now, nearly 500,000 people in Guinea could be food insecure 1 year from now. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The South African Development Community has sent its electoral observer mission to Lesotho before February 28 elections. An attempted coup in August last year prompted the regional bloc to bring elections forward by 2 years in order to restore stability in the landlocked kingdom surrounded by South Africa. Gillian Parker reports from Johannesburg.
Lesotho's Prime Minister Thomas Tabane was forced into exile in August last year when a military faction attempted to topple his government. Mr. Tabane presided over a coalition government, the first of its kind in the country's history, but one that was a product of political necessity in 2012 when elections failed to produce a clear winner. Mr. Tabane accused Deputy Prime Minister Motachoa Metsing of propelling the coup attempt with Army Commander Talali Kamoli, allegations that have been hotly denied by Metsing and the Army. The Southern African Development Community, comprising 15 Southern African nations, deployed a mission last year to restore peace and facilitate dialogue. Following negotiations, fronted by South Africa's Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, Lesotho's coalition government agreed to call a snap election for the end of this month. South Africa's Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Maite Nkuna Mashabane, who is heading the SADC election observer mission, said Wednesday observers would be deployed in all 10 districts of Lesotho and remain until the results are concluded. Clayson Monyela is spokesman for the minister.
The priority for SADC is always to ensure that the elections that take place in the region observe the SADC protocols on the running of democratic elections, you know, to ensure that the environment is peaceful and conducive so that the will of the people is expressed.
The election is happening against the backdrop of political violence that has plagued Lesotho during its nearly 50 years of independence. A deadly shootout in the capital, Maseru, on February 1st, saw two of the Prime Minister's bodyguards and members of the Lesotho Defence Force wounded outside the gate of King Letsi III's royal palace. A private security guard was killed in the crossfire. The latest eruption of violence suggests little has been done to address the tense relations between the army and the police. Both forces have become highly politicised by the country's opposing leaders, Mr. Tabane, who is supported by the police, and his deputy Metsing, who has the loyalty of the army. South Africa's deputy president concluded a visit to the mountainous kingdom last week as part of ongoing facilitation efforts. His spokesman, Ronnie Mamoepa, spoke to VOA News.
At this stage, there is no reason to be overly concerned about any possible violence. But from a perspective of the facilitation, the deputy president has expressed confidence and satisfaction regarding preparations for the elections.
A directive from the SADC mission said that the Lesotho Defence Force would be confined to its barracks on election day. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Johannesburg.
A look at news elsewhere. The Swiss subsidiary of British banking giant HSBC faces a new investigation for alleged money laundering. Geneva prosecutors searched the bank's offices following reports it helped clients evade millions of dollars of taxes. Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Paris.
Geneva prosecutors say they have opened a criminal investigation into HSBC Private Bank in Switzerland for aggravated money laundering. In a statement, they said the move comes after recent revelations involving the Geneva branch. Last week, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists in Washington, D.C., and several media organizations reported HSBC Switzerland helped clients in more than 200 countries evade millions of dollars in taxes. The reports were based on files stolen by a former HSBC employee in 2007. They were given to French authorities, who shared them with other countries. Economics professor Tomasz Mikulski of HEC Business School in Paris notes HSBC's Swiss unit already faces probes by authorities in France and Argentina, among other countries. These latest allegations add to its problems.
Because it wasn't only passive tax evasion, that they kept money of people on their accounts without asking any questions. It was actually active encouragement of tax evasion, active money laundering, and also related with, for example, arms traders, drug dealers, dictators. So the affair is potentially much more serious.
In a statement Wednesday, HSBC Private Bank said it has cooperated with Swiss authorities since the data theft. In response to the reports last week, its CEO, Frank Amora, said it had shut down accounts of clients who did not meet its high standards. HSBC is not the first bank to come under scrutiny in recent years. U.S. authorities, for example, have fined several financial institutions, including Swiss banks UBS and Credit Suisse, for helping U.S. citizens evade taxes. Again, Tomasz Mikulski.
So I think this is also going to happen to HSBC, in the sense that they're going to have to pay a lot of fines. A lot of people are going to be fired. Probably some may face criminal investigation.
Mikulski says the 2008 financial crisis has led to a tougher regulatory environment, and cash-strapped countries are paying greater attention to individual and corporate tax evaders. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today, because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
This is African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. The United Nations Security Council is scheduled to hold an emergency session today on the crisis in Libya. Nearly 40 people died in suicide bombings in Nigeria yesterday. The military spokesman for South Sudan's armed opposition has defected from the group due to concerns about the movement's leadership. Coming up, we'll have music from Sierra Leone, and in our feature segment on this America's Black History Month, we honor the achievements of African Americans. I'm Kim Lewis with the Hayes Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is African News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. Happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you're starting with Cricket World Cup today.
Kim, Bangladesh beat Afghanistan by 105 runs Wednesday at the Cricket World Cup, which is being co-hosted by Australia and New Zealand. The match was played at Manuka Oval in Australia's capital of Canberra. And the final score from Manuka Oval, Bangladesh 267 for 50 overs, Afghanistan 162 for 42.5 overs. Bangladesh's captain Mushfiqur Rahim was named man of the match after tallying 71 runs. Speaking afterwards, the 26-year-old Rahim said there was a great atmosphere in Canberra, and he gave thanks to the crowd, which included his father and his uncle. It was the first match for both teams at the 14-nation cricket extravaganza. Afghanistan is making its debut at the Cricket World Cup, while Bangladesh's best previous performance was reaching the Super 8 round in 2007. Meanwhile, the Chevrons of Zimbabwe return to action Thursday at the Cricket World Cup. They'll play the United Arab Emirates in Nelson, New Zealand. Zimbabwe is coming off a 62-run loss to neighbor South Africa Sunday in the opening match for both teams. The Chevrons surprised many Zimbabwe cricket fans with their strong performance against the Proteas from South Africa. Reporter Michael Cariotti tells us more from Zimbabwe's capital, Harare.
Nobody, including their most loyal followers, expected the Chevron to put up such a strong resistance against the mighty Proteas. But the Chevrons now have more on their hands than the Proteas test. The Zimbabweans are second from bottom in their group just above the West Indies, and a defeat against the United Arab Emirates Thursday could see them sink rock bottom and on their way out of the tournament. Victory over the associate side will put the Zimbabweans back on track for a place in the Super 8 stage, which has been the dream of the whole country. Captain Elton Chigumbura thinks the performance against the South Africans has raised the spirits in the camp.
With the performance that we saw, it's a good sign. It gives confidence to the guys.
There is also an extra reward for the Zimbabweans. A win over the United Arab Emirates would guarantee the Chevrons a $45,000 haul. The International Cricket Council has dangled a 45,000 carat for a team that wins a game in their group stages. The star of the South African show, Hamilton Masakadza, who plundered 80 runs against the Proteas, thinks the Chevrons' current form gives them an edge over the United Arab Emirates. But defeat could send Zimbabwe's dream up in smoke. Cricket analyst Enoch Mchinjo:
the guys have been looking in very good form, so I think guys with their strips, then we've got a very good chance.
India, South Africa and Ireland led the group with 2 points each, while the United Arab Emirates are in fourth position as they have not yet started their campaign. Pakistan, Zimbabwe and the West Indies occupy the other three remaining positions, if they've all lost their opening games. The Chevrons, though, will be buoyed on by the fact that the United Arab Emirates only qualified despite finishing second behind Scotland in the World Cup qualifiers. More importantly, is the fact that the ICC League one side has been struggling and did not win a single game at the 2014 ICC World 2020. The team that is coached by Aqib Javed has one win in 10 ODI matches and is widely regarded as the weakest team in the 14-team World Cup assembly. The winners of the World Cup will receive $3,975,000, while the runners-up will get $1,750,000. Maybe to push them harder, the Chevrons have to be reminded that they will receive only $35,000 should they be eliminated in the group stages. Reporting in Harare, this is Michael Kariatsi.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your heart. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Turning to African athletics, the University of Pretoria in South Africa will host a big event Saturday that is being staged to raise awareness about the fight against cancer. Our Daybreak Africa sportsman Mark Ouma reports.
South Africa Medical Insurance Company BestMed stage running, walking and wheelchair races at the High Performance Center, University of Pretoria in South Africa, aimed at raising awareness and funds to treat cancer patients on Saturday. Expecting over 13,000 race entries, BestMed Executive Marketing Manager Chris Late explains their vision.
We've got a long association with cancer, being a health care provider, medical aid in South Africa. We obviously see a rise in cancer patients. BestMed funds many millions of rands of cancer treatment every year, caring for people that might not be able to afford medical aid. But in general, just making greater awareness, cancer also sponsors the race with sunscreen, which helps protect the athletes. The proceeds of the race will be going directly towards this non-profit organization.
But this year you have a specific touch, a specific race on cancer. What exactly is this specific race?
Okay. The specific race is creating specific awareness for cancer. The director of the university, Professor Shella Della Rey, has posed the challenge to the CEO of BestMed, Mr. Dries Legrandsi, for the fastest between the two of them, the fastest 2 kilometers, and the loser will have to donate specific funds to cancer. And what we've done in addition to it is also the athletes has been requested voluntarily if they'd like to make an additional financial contribution to cancer when entering the event. So we're hoping to raise some significant funds for cancer.
That was Chris Late, Executive Marketing Manager, BestMed Medical Insurance Company, speaking at the University of Pretoria. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Voice of America!
Elsewhere in African athletics, a Kenyan woman is earning kudos for her courageous attempt to win the Austin Marathon in the U.S. state of Texas. After collapsing to the ground with about 50 meters to the finish line, Yvonne Engetich was leading the female runners for most of the race. But with the finish line in sight, she fell. And then on her hands and knees in obvious pain, she began an agonizing crawl to the finish line. Some of the fans in Austin started to cry as they witnessed Engetich's determination, but most cheered her on. Let's listen in now to the Austin race announcer.
She led for the entire race. You are witnessing human performance like never before. The effort. Come on, you Austin.
There she is, guys and gals, crossing that line. That is what we call guts, young lady. You are one tough young lady. Excellent work. Crawling the last 50 meters to the finish line. Woo! That is guts.
She did it!
Yes, she did, VOA sports fans. Yvonne Engetich crawled across the finish line in Austin, Texas. A nurse kept close watch on Engetich during her crawl and had a wheelchair close by, but the nurse and marathon officials refrained from helping her out, which would have disqualified Engetich. American runner Hannah Stefan raced past the Kenyan for second place as she was about to cross the finish line. However, race officials said Engetich had definitely earned the second place prize money because of her heroic performance and would get it. And Kim, I know we've both seen some video of that race.
Yes.
Incredible performance.
Just incredible. I just get so emotional just thinking about it. I think she'll go down in history as one of the most determined athletes ever. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of little baby girls named after her.
Yes, just great determination.
Yes.
So let's give a Sunny Side of Sports shout out for Yvonne Engetich at the at the Austin Marathon in Texas. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yehaeus Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up on this America's Black History Month, we honor achievements of African Americans. And next, we look into the plight of child soldiers in the Central African Republic. But first, some music. Here is Sierra Leone Soir with Africa.
Sijali kwe
kweli sijalie mimi ni wako uni wangu yeye yeah, yeah.
Sierra Leone Soir with Africa.
Well, for more than 20 years, people of all races have been learning about America's Black history by visiting museums honoring African Americans and the Civil Rights Movement. Many communities have built museums to serve as lasting tributes to what was a painful but important chapter in U.S. history. VOA's Chris Simpkins begins his report from Birmingham, Alabama, with an African American leader of the nonviolent protest in the 1960s.
The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and others led peaceful demonstrations, but some marches turned violent when police used fire hoses and dogs against the demonstrators. Many people were wounded. Thousands were arrested. The images galvanized support for the bid to end racial discrimination. Nearly 50 years later, people come to Birmingham's Civil Rights Institute to learn about the battle for civil rights in the U.S. South. William Revel traveled several hours to see the museum.
Black people need to know their heritage. They need to know where they came from. They need to know the price that our people paid for us to be where we are today. It came with a price. Unfortunately, with that price meant that a lot of our people died.
Lawrence Pijo is president of the museum. He showed off the actual jail cell door that once kept Martin Luther King behind bars.
This is an extremely important artifact at the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute.
Pijo says Dr. King wrote his famous letter from Birmingham jail locked behind that door. The essay became the clearest justification for the civil rights protest.
It's important that we have this institution here so that people, not only in this country, but people come from around the world to learn about what happened in Birmingham.
Multimedia presentations, photographs, and artifacts are used to document the African American struggle. Anne Marie Wilson is visiting from London.
We have heard that Alabama has been very significant in the integration process, but also had a lot of pain along its journey. And I wanted to see what I could learn from that, to see how peaceful demonstrations can enable a diverse population to live side by side in harmony.
Vernon Roberts from New Jersey says the exhibits bring back powerful memories.
It kind of got emotional for me. And it gave me the opportunity to want to bring more of my family, especially to have my children here, so that they can see the struggle that took place here in Birmingham.
Last year, the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute attracted thousands of visitors. The hope is that even more will come this year. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Birmingham, Alabama.
As the Central African Republic struggles to end 2 years of sectarian violence, the plight of some 10,000 child soldiers serves as a brutal legacy. Their release by armed rebels is one step in a long, uncertain road to a normal life. Emily Ayoub reports from Bangui.
Lionel and Laura, not their real names, had known each other as far back as they can remember. The two friends both grew up in a small town about 150 kilometers from the capital Bangui. Earlier last year, members of the ex-Seleka rebels arrived and killed Lionel's mother and Laura's father. Angry and eager for revenge, they joined in a rival armed group, says Lionel, who was 15 years old at the time. Laura was just 13. The word was getting around in the village. The anti-Baleka militias were enrolling people to fight. He says they joined and were sent to the front line where they fought all the time. This lasted for 4 months until UNICEF, along with family members, managed to get both children out of the rank of the anti-Baleka. Lionel now lives with his father in Bangui. Laura lives with her aunt. But reintegration will take far longer than the children's time in arms. Laura's aunt says they have never talked about what her niece did or experienced while part of the armed group, but she clearly sees how it changed her. At home, her life in the armed group is always on her mind. Sometimes she will make a weapon with bits of wood, she says. Her aunt says Laura is trying to prepare other children in the house to be ready to fight, because that is what she knows. The Italian humanitarian agency CUPI provides psychosocial support not only for the children, but also for their family members. CUPI psychologist Edouard Conan says it is sometimes difficult for families to understand how their children have changed, and they sometimes end up rejecting them.
On s'adresse aux parents pour leur expliquer un peu les difficultés vécues par leur enfant.
So we explain it to them and we guide them on what attitude to adopt to patch things up, to reestablish a relationship and their role as parents instead of censoring or rejecting their own children, he says. CUPI's aim is to make sure that, ultimately, the child will be accepted back into the family. But the reintegration is made even more difficult by the fact that many of the children go back to live in the same neighborhood still controlled by the armed groups they used to belong to. Sometimes, says Lionel, they meet in the street. We say hi to each other, but it doesn't go further than that, he says, because he never wants to return to that life. Lionel and Laura are now back in school. Emily Yab for VOA News in Bangui.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up with this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a further sign of the United States' determination to help the nations of Africa combat terrorism, millions of dollars in rewards are being offered for information on three more leaders of the Al-Qaeda-linked Somalia-based terrorist organization Harakat Shabab al-Mujahideen, or Al-Shabaab. The men are Yasin Kilwe, Abdikader Mohammed Abdikader, also known as Ikrima, and Jafar, also known as Ammar. The group, listed as a foreign terrorist organization since 2008, has control of large areas of southern and central Somalia and is responsible for the death of thousands of Somali citizens, peace activists, international aid workers, journalists, and civilians, as well as African Union peacekeepers who are helping to restore stability and prosperity to the region. Tens of thousands of people have been forced to flee their homes amid the fighting. Since 2006, Al-Shabaab has engaged in a campaign of violence, including bombings and suicide attacks, which has killed thousands. In July 2010, it planned and executed a bomb attack in Kampala, Uganda, that killed more than 70 people, including an American citizen. Yasin Kilwe is Al-Shabaab's leader in the Puntland region of Somalia. He pledged his allegiance to Al-Qaeda in February 2012. Abdikader, 34 years old, was born in Kenya of Somali parents. He has coordinated recruitment of Kenyan youth into Al-Shabaab and commanded a force of Kenyan fighters operating in Somalia. He reportedly has medium-length hair, a thick mustache, and is missing three fingers on his left hand. Jafar has served as Abdikader's deputy and reportedly is missing one eye. If you have information on any of these men, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy. Submit a tip through the RFJ website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net. The United States guarantees that all credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the United States is prepared to protect informants by relocating them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butter here to remind you that February is Black History Month in the United States. And starting February 2nd, we'll begin our Black History Month series and daily quiz on Daybreak Africa. Listen every morning as we profile historical African-American and African individuals and events. You can win special VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your answer. We will select a winner each morning from among the correct answers.